If you notice, yesterday we kicked off the podcast with a kickoff thought. Yesterday it was from Kurt Hines at Coronado High School in California. Today we have Coach Bill Williams, who's been a part of our national teams, does a great job for us. He's a former Marine, and he is just passionate about football and life, and he has our thought for today.
Hello, everybody. This is Bill Williams from Bill Williams Champion Ride, bringing you the Tuesday kickoff. Let's kick off this week by reaching our full potential. That means if you're an 8, be an 8. Don't walk around this world a 3.5. Reach your full potential. Max out life, baby. I call it living the mo life. And today, I'm going to bring you my pillars. So, the first pillar of success is your associations. The people you associate with will determine the outcome of your life, whether it's good or bad. Show me your 3 best friends and I will show you your future. Associate yourself with people who want more than halfway, that are pushing the envelope, that will not allow those little distractions in life to knock them off their path. Man, the people you associate with have more input into your life than you truly believe. Look around you. If your friends ain't winning, you ain't gonna be winning. The most important thing that any coach, teacher, parent will ever tell you is be careful who you associate with and be brave enough, be tough enough, and have the guts enough to be alone before you hang out with people that aren't pushing the envelope, people that'll drag you down. Play at your own level alone if you can't find no one to hang out with. But please, pay attention to the first pillar of your success because it is the most important. And not only is it the most important in that life of a young man, a young woman, it will be the most important throughout this life that you live on this earth. Truly great people make others feel that they can be great too. And if your friends ain't winning, you ain't winning. Get around winners. Get around people that are pushing the envelope. Separate yourself. If you say you want to be the champion, if you have true goals, dreams, and desires, then you should be around winners, man. You don't see the champs hanging out with the chumps. They separate themselves from them. So pay attention to pillar number one and take that with you this week. Take it with you this next month, this next year, and for every year, the rest of your life, man. If you want to be the greatest, separate yourself. Because I promise you, it'll make the biggest difference in your success, your associations. The next pillar of success is attitude. Your attitude is how you think, how you act, and how you feel. And I'm going to give you this bit of advice so you can tie all this together on your own. If your friends are right, your attitude's going to be right. But make sure that you get around people that ain't afraid to tell you what you need to hear when it's not what you want to hear. You got to be around next level people. Hang around people you know are better than you, because that'll make your attitude that much better. And humble yourself. And if you get around those kind of people, pillar number two, your attitude will be great because your thinking will be great. And if you think great, you'll act great. If you act great, you'll feel great. Your attitude is simply how you think, how you act, and how you feel. And the third pillar of success is your habits. And when your associations are right and your attitude's right, your habits will be right. And you can study the greatest individuals that ever have lived on this earth. The greatest achievers that have ever lived on this earth. The champions, the 1% of the people that have reached the highest levels in academics, athletics on this earth. They all had great habits. They sacrificed one thing for the sake of another. They got up an hour earlier. They did things every day that made them greater, and they did not put things off. They had great habits. And when they didn't want to do it and didn't feel like doing it, their habit took over and they did it. Have great associations. It'll build your great attitude. And your great associations and your great attitude will build your habits. And when you don't feel like doing it, your body will go do it anyway. And your attitude will hold you accountable, and your associations will hold you accountable to your greatness. Live big today. Give big today. and forgive big today.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
We continue on with our home team series with our guest host, Joel Nellis. And today we have head coach Joe Adam from St. Anselm College in New Hampshire. He's been a part of two Division II national championships and was a part of bringing St. Anselm the first playoff appearance in school history. And he's going to discuss the importance of family in a coach's life and what that's looked like for him throughout his career. I think you'll find a lot in this home team podcast, as you usually do. And we look forward to Coach Nellis providing more of these this offseason. Here's Joel Nellis with Coach Joe Adams.
Today we're going to be speaking with Coach Joe Adam from Division II St. Anselm College. Adam came to the Hilltop with more than 20 years of coaching experience with success at all levels of NCAA football, having been a part of two NCAA Division II national championships. Adam has taken his team to bowl games and helped the program reach the NCAA playoffs for the first time in the school's history. Prior to coming to St. Anselm, Adam served as the offensive line coach at Syracuse for 2 years. He helped coach an offense that ranked in the top 10 of the program's past 50 seasons. His offensive line unit finished in the top third of Division I FBS teams in fewest sacks allowed. He also coached an all-ACC selection and NFL free agent signee Sean Hickey of the New Orleans Saints. Prior to Syracuse, Adam spent 8 seasons at Elmhurst College in Illinois, serving as the head coach for the 2013 season. Adam's defense allowed 110 yards less per game than the year before. With Adam as the team's defensive coordinator in 2012, the Blue Jays earned their first conference championship in 22 years, qualifying for the Division III playoffs for the first time in program history. Adam also spent time at Western Michigan University and Grand Valley State, winning 2 national titles with the Lakers, including one in 2003 with then-head coach Brian Kelly, now the head coach at Notre Dame. Adam received his Bachelor of Science degree in physical education from Grand Valley State. He and his wife, Lisa, have 2 children, Joe and Jessica. Coach Adam, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me this morning. It's a beautiful day in Manchester this morning.
It's a beautiful day in Brookfield, Wisconsin at the moment as well. It's great. Let's jump right in and start talking about the stars of your home team. So beginning with your wife, how did you meet this special woman?
Yeah, you know, I'm a head coach, but I call her the real head coach. She's the one that kind of makes all the decisions. I met her actually before all this Match.com and all those types of things. We met on AOL, actually, and we met each other in a chat room, and that started our conversations, and we had such great conversations, and that kind of transpired to a lot of phone calls, and then got a chance to meet in person, and the rest is kind of history.
And that's going to date some of our listeners. Some are going to have to go and AOL, like, what is AOL? What is all this going on? Oh, man, chat rooms and AOL.
That's old school right there.
Yeah. What is her background? What does she currently do? And does she have any other passions or interests that she carves out time for?
Yeah, we lived in Chicago. We grew up in Chicago most of my life before moving out here to the East Coast. And she worked for the city of Chicago, for 25 years, and spent a lot of time there. And then, as we transitioned to some other places, she's now working at an oral surgeon's office, which she enjoys, and she does have a side business that she is very passionate about, which is jewelry, and she does that and sells that online and those types of things. So she basically works, I guess, 2 full-time jobs, if you want to call it that, but she's really passionate about the jewelry business.
What's a character trait that makes her so invaluable in your life?
I don't know if I could just come to one. I think that's a pretty difficult question. The things that come to my mind and the things that make her so invaluable in my life is, she has patience. And I think as football coaches, we're We're not normally patient people, I think obviously due to our profession. So she really provides patience, kindness, and love. You know, her love is unconditional, and that's something that I carry over into my coaching life, is to make sure that, you know, we're pouring into our players, and as she pours, you know, into me every day and gives me some guidance and inspiration. So she inspires me every day with you know, how she goes about things, and I wouldn't want to do this thing called life without her.
That's awesome. Let's talk about other members of your starting lineup, your kids. What are their names, ages, and interests?
I have a non-traditional family. When I met my wife, Lisa, she had two children. You know, we kind of start out our relationship of, you know, hey, I'm not going to be that role model. And then our relationship blossomed. And eventually I ended up, now it's just about 6 years ago, I ended up legally adopting my children. So, awesome. You know, so for you coaches out there, definitely say that being a father, it takes just love, you know, and loving on people. And that's the most important thing. So I have two, my son, who we changed his name to mine, which is Joe, and my daughter is Jessica. And they're both in the state of Texas. And Jessica's married to Marcus, and they have two children, both my grandchildren, named Marcus and Mason. And then my son Joe is in Houston with his girlfriend Stephanie, and her two children, Athena and Arius. So basically, what my son is doing is exactly what I did in my own kids' lives. And I'm excited to see how it pans out for him.
What was the hardest part about maybe building those relationships with those kids, entering that relationship? Was that something that you kind of already had background recruiting kids and developing relationships? I mean, is there anything that really carried over from what you did in the football realm to, you know, developing those relationships with those kids?
Yeah, I think just, you know, just being honest and putting their interests in front of our own. You know, and developing them, and I think, you know, more importantly is just believing in them, you know, and asking them what their aspirations are, asking them what their dreams are, and being there when the times are hard and they need a shoulder to kind of lean on, and also being there when they needed that motivation to kind of push through some of the barriers that may have been in front of them. So there's a lot of carryover from, you know, how I treat my kids in my family and how I treat my kids in my football family. And it starts with respect and love and honor. And we push a lot of different buttons, you know, as coaches, and we motivate in a lot of different ways. And I did the same thing with my own children.
Let's move on to a section called We Make the Call and discuss how your family has navigated some of those important decisions throughout your coaching career. We all know the commitment it takes to be a coach. How were those early negotiations with your wife about, you know, your coaching profession and career?
The best thing I did when I first met my wife was she was not a football, you know, wife or football lady per se. And it takes a very special individual and a very special lady to live this lifestyle. I'll be very honest with you. We sat down and I explained to her what this life is and what this is going and very well can be. And the ups and the downs and the trials and the tribulations. And so we had a lot of those discussions early on about, you know, that we are going to potentially move a lot if we want to continue to do what we do and at a certain level. And we have to be open to adventure and we have to have courage to get out of the comfort zone. And, you know, that was an integral part of my coaching life and my coaching start, was just having that conversation. And then, you know, if I'm going to give any advice, the most important thing of any job that I looked at when we discussed looking at different places is it's more important about who you work with than where you work. And I've always looked at every opportunity with that in mind. And, a lot of people get big and enthralled with the name or the logo. It's more important about the people that you work with than where you work. And that served us pretty well over the last 22 years.
That's great advice, man. We've heard a lot of different things when it comes to taking new jobs, but I think that's a really good one. Bigger isn't always better. And like you said, there's the people factor, because that's where you're going to spend most of your time with. Has she then, in some of your jobs you've taken, gone and met the coaches or wives ahead of time when you were interviewing?
Yeah, there was a lot of conversations, where I may have been interested in something, and whether it's the hiring person, the wife. I've been very fortunate that the jobs that we have been in, there has been some similarity and a lot of already personal relationships. So the newness of it wasn't quite shocking. And, so I think having those conversations and I do that, the same way. One of the questions I ask in the hiring process now as a head coach is, is your significant other on board with this? Do they understand what this is and what the expectations are? And, I also believe in coaching that if you're not happy at home or there's resentment at home, it doesn't matter how much money you're making or where you're coaching at, you're not going to enjoy coaching. And I believe that if there's something going on at home, then it's going to affect your coaching life. And if you're unhappy in your coaching life, it will affect you at home. We don't do a very good job as coaches of turning things off. I know some guys and can't, but we all have smartphones and Twitter, and recruiting is now a 24-hour job, it seems. But I think that's an important piece of, especially like I said, when we look at opportunities and I hire guys, sometimes I do talk to the significant others, and sometimes I don't, just depending on what the situation is. But that support system and that and that piece of the pie is an important piece in the overall development of the coach.
Did you ever involve or have asked your kids at any time about, potential career moves? Or I don't know their ages at the times you were moving around. Is that something you've ever done, or have heard any advice from some people that has?
Yeah, my kids were older. So, when I came into their lives, they were teenagers. So, it's a non-traditional family, but God intended it that way, I guess. I have had because they were a little bit older and it affected them. We have had some discussions about different opportunities along the way, and wanted to get their feedback, and especially when it affected schools, and that's what people don't understand in our profession, and I think the general public, as they just see this guy gets fired, this guy gets hired. Most of every single one of those coaches has a family. And they're either, newborns, or they've created a system. And now, unbeknownst to the children, they're going to go home one day and be told that either, dad has to look for a new job, or dad's got an opportunity somewhere else. And that's a hard thing for the in the development of kids. And that's why, the support system around the coaching staff, the administration, the schools, and really the head coach in trying to make it just a family environment is so important. So in a number of my opportunities, I did talk to my children and get their viewpoint and take that into effect.
Let's move on to the next series of questions called clock management and how you spend your time to blend family and football. When taking a new job, give our listeners one recommendation about moving and maybe one thing you should avoid.
I would say avoid going out and buying new boxes all the time.
Hey, that's a key, right? The little things.
And those things rack up on you, man, especially if you have a lot of stuff.
And, man, it's a little – Coach Davis, moving, a little
– Sorry.
I was going to say, it's a little thing but a big thing, as my coach in college used to say, right? It's a little thing but right. a big thing. You don't want to keep having stockpiling boxes or having to go buy them new every time. That's good. I like it.
No doubt. And, you know, the recommendation is just explore everything you can. You know, we live in the age of the internet now where – You can know pretty much everything about any place. You know, looking at if you're shipping stuff, you know, do you need to use a pod? Do you want to use your own car? Do you want to use a U-Haul? You know, you have to factor all those things out and do that research. And I think if you're living in a city environment, one of the things I think is really important that doesn't get talked about is wherever you're thinking about moving, always go and check that place out at night and not just during the day. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of things like, you know, you'll go buy an apartment or a house. You're like, man, this is awesome and this is great. Well, yeah, that's during the day when a lot of people are at work, you know, but go and go back and, you know, go at 8, 9, maybe 10 o'clock at night, swing by, see what's going on. You know, is that because that's the real neighborhood that you're going to live in. And, you know, are there people shooting off fireworks? Are there people having a good time? Is that your scene? Do you want more of a quiet area? You know, not a lot of people think about that, but I've done it a lot of other places that I've looked at.
A very unique insight. I like that. Because, you might not think about, like I said, during the daytime, it's all well and good, but, you know, the nighttime might be a whole different world. And, for good or bad or worse, right? Maybe it's too down. You know, you might not like that. You know, if it's too, it's kind of lively, then maybe that's something you do like. So it just has to fit your personality.
Right.
Other than weekly dinners, you know, most coaches will say, hey, my wife and I eat on Thursday nights. What is a small thing you do to help your marriage during the season?
A lot of the times, you know, we play our games at most of our games in the afternoon. And, okay. You know, besides grading our film on Saturdays, I like to spend Saturday, the rest of Saturday with my wife, you know, and we get a chance to spend our date night on Thursday nights for the short time that we have, you know, which is difficult during the season. But I also like to spend, you know, parts of Saturday, especially right after the game, you know, just having some time. And the other thing I think has really, you know, continually made our marriage strong is I switched our coaching schedule because I go to church on Sunday. Okay. And, you know, we don't have meetings until after that time. And that's an important piece for my wife and I to be at and to worship and to keep the main thing the main thing. And that more so than any dinner or time or date night out has been a real blessing to us.
Great. Love it. What is one thing you do on a semi-regular basis to help out with things on the home front? Coach Bullis here at Whitewater said that I think his thing is the dishes. He just goes in there, gets the dishes done. Is there anything you do on the home front that, you know, just provides a little bit extra help?
I call it whatever's necessary. Yeah, I'm a better coach than I am a homeowner, and I'm living in I'm owning my first home in my entire life here in Manchester. So, like I said, I'm getting better at some of the handiwork. I'm not there yet. Thank God for great neighbors, but you know, I always view the things at home as. I'm in a partnership with my wife, and it's my job just as much as hers to share in the work. So I do whatever's necessary, whether it's dishes, whether it's mopping the floor, whether it's vacuuming the carpet, dusting, whatever. I know that when she is in that mode, she needs a partner to it. And that has really been a real key to our success in our marriage is, you know, viewing this as not as different roles and it's your job or my job. We're partners in this thing together, and whatever needs to get done gets done. And that's really helped.
You know, kids often will stop by practice based on their ages, right? And some of your coaching staff may, you know, kids of different ages. What are other ways that you've seen kids be involved in what the, you know, team or coaching commitments?
Yeah, when I was at Syracuse, we had a family night, and I'm a little bit of a bigger guy, so you know, everyone's kids used to run, and I guess I became the jungle gym. So we had a little semi WWE match going on between, I remember it was Tim Lester's kids and Tim Lester's kids and some of the kids that were on the staff. And we would just run around, man, and just be kids. And that was fun. And, you know, trying to include families whenever you can, whether it's road trips or if it's a special piece like, a bowl game or something like that. You know, I often have get-togethers at my house with my coaching staff here outside of football, just for a game night or something like that, or you know, going to see the Fisher Cats play. So you try and find other things just besides coming to practice that, you know, involves the kids, and more importantly, knowing as a head coach, knowing what those children are involved in. And making sure that you allow your coaches to be a part of that throughout, you know, the week if you can. And I think that's a really, really important piece. If Coach Sofchek's little girl, Bradley, who's 3 years old, is in, he's our offensive coordinator. If she's in, you know, dance, or they have, they're going apple picking or something like that, you know, or she's in something that's important. It's my job to know that and to give him an opportunity to be part of that, you know, and that's what I've learned more as I've gone along being a head coach and being a little bit older and wiser at this profession is the balance between, you know, work and home.
Do you think there was a time, is there a time when you were maybe a assistant coach where you had a hard time asking those questions, or have you missed something that kind of led to that? You know, philosophy.
When I was younger, I was the Philo, the first in and the last out. And I believed in 80 to 100 hours a week. I just think, just having a more of a presence and an understanding about being in their shoes now with me in the head coaching role. I think that, I've been in their shoes, and I felt bad at some times where I was like, hey, I gotta miss this, or hey, I gotta go here, we're gonna outwork a lot of people here, and that's what I believe. And you know, it's spring break, we've been in here every single day, so right. We work, and I'm just cognizant of the fact of when I was an assistant, you know, and the coach. Our head coach said, hey, you know what? I'm going to kick you out of the office. You need to go do that. Sometimes we need, as assistants, we need to be told that it's okay. You know, yeah. Because we don't want to let people down. We don't want to let our head coach down. We don't want to let, you know, our fans down. We don't want to let the administration down. And that's why everything that I do from a schedule standpoint, I don't look at it as a head coach. I put myself in the shoes of my assistants, especially the ones with children, and say, okay, you know, would this work? And then I discuss it with my staff before I post it and say, okay, well, this is for the betterment of the group, and it works for most.
Phones are becoming a big issue. I know I'm very guilty of it. How do you manage your phone time when you're at home?
Oh, that's a hard one. That's a hard one.
I know. We're all guilty, man. It's at least ask the question. We could at least talk about some ideas.
I like to play a lot of cards, so a lot of the time I'll just turn my phone upside down. And if I don't want to be on the phone, because we all know, you know, it's like candy. As soon as that little notification or light pops up, it's like, okay, I'm missing something. And yep. I see it in our own players here when they're in a meeting for 30 minutes. They all pull out their phones like they're missing the world. You know, so I think just, you know, and my wife reminds me to focus, you know, on what's going on right now. And so a lot of the time, if I'm struggling with my phone, I will take it, I will turn it upside down so I can't see any, and it's on silent about 100% of the time. I never have the ringer on, by the way. And I will not see the notifications. So it provides me peace and provides me a break from the messages and the Twitter notifications and the Facebook this and you name it.
Yes, no doubt. there's a common saying amongst coaches that the person with the marker last will win. How do you and your staff avoid being too analytical every week and maybe therefore spend unnecessary time preparing?
You know, something that, you know, we do here is we look at it and say, okay, well, you know, what do our players do well, and am I accentuating those positives and not asking them to do something that they don't do well? And we can sit here and play chalkboard all night and, okay, we'll line up this front and this coverage and, okay, I've got something to beat it. And so when we watch film, we're going to, you know, attack the weaknesses. There's a weakness to every defense or offense, and we're going to try and exploit that through, you know, on defense, obviously through pressure and movement, and on offense through tempo, scheme, route, whatever it may be. Along those lines. So we believe in keeping things simple here, and it's about playing fast and not about all the X's and O's. And if we can't teach it to, you know, if it doesn't make sense to a third grader, then it's too hard. So so we try to simplify as much as we can so that our guys have confidence when they get on the field and they can play fast and free. And that's what we really preach here.
The final set of questions we'll call prevent defense, hoping to provide some bigger picture things that can prevent a coach from losing what is most important. Can you share one of the struggles you've had to overcome as a family during your career and what lessons other coaches could learn from it?
Yeah, I'm going to share something a little bit here. You know, when I was coaching at Western Michigan, you know, we didn't have a lot of money. I didn't grow up with a lot of money, and that's kind of made the blue collar guy that I am today. And you know, we had to live, I was living in Kalamazoo. My wife was working for the city of Chicago, and we had to move into basically a refurbished or redone, attic in, just outside of, just down the street from Wrigley Field, actually about a couple of miles. And, it was one of those places, it was really small. You know, you know, if you're on the one side of the room, and you're in bed, you had to wait for the other person to get out of bed so you could get out of bed instead of climbing over. And, you know, it wasn't where we wanted to be as a family, but it was necessary for where we are. And, you know, I think back at those times and I really thank God for putting us in that place, because it reminds me of where we've been together as a family and where, you know, where we are now. And, so those, that was a struggle. And, you know, that really was a struggle. And, we didn't have a lot of things. We didn't have a lot of space. I was going back and forth a little bit, you know, from Western Michigan and Chicago, and the coaches were great, you know, with my schedule and those types of things. And I think one of the lessons that I learned is don't compare your families to other people. You know, your reality is your reality, and you make the best of your reality, and you thank God for the blessings that you have in your life. And you don't compare your house to your neighbor's house. You don't compare, you know, the assistant coach's car to the other assistant coach's car. So live your life and what's important to you, and don't judge others, and you won't be judged. And that was, that's a really important lesson. I think I learned from that is, you know, sometimes you have to go through the struggles and don't compare your lifestyle to everybody else. If you want to get somewhere, create a plan and go attack it. And that's exactly what we did. And, but that part of it was a necessary step for us to continue to move forward as a coach and as a family.
Very powerful. I love it. What is an important aspect of parenting that you think carries over into coaching?
I think learning is, what I've understood a little bit more, in the coaching ranks as I've continued to get better as a coach, is people learn differently, and there's not one way to do it, and if there was, everyone would do it, and so there's a lot of learning modes and different proficiencies in that realm, and I just like to see how people learn. I watch my grandchildren and see how they learn, and they use different cues and tips. And we do the same thing, with our players. Some guys learn by the board, some guys learn by video, some people have to walk through it. And that's the fun when you see a young man just kind of get it and the light bulb goes off and they show that confidence that you know that they have in them, but you have to extract out of them. So I think just understanding that people learn differently is something that I've carried over.
By seeing your commitment to your family, how does that directly or indirectly help your players grow as men?
I think people have come here, and what we're building here at this college is a lot of it because of our value systems here. And I think the guys know who we are as men all the time. And, that doesn't waver, hiring great men of character and quality families is probably the most important piece into this whole hiring piece here. And, when you look at the family and seeing my family come around and our kids come around, I think they see the natural side of us, and understanding that, when the decisions that I make as a young man in this program affect everybody. And I tell those guys, the decisions that you make in a dorm are going to affect Coach Sofchek's 3-year-old daughter. And they don't see that directly until sometimes they see her at practice. And I remind them that, hey, you know what? You have choices to make, and that affects that guy's life. And I think having that family aspect and that understanding of accountability and consequence, I think has really helped those guys grow.
I like that point too. I mean, I think a lot of guys, I'd like to think they understand that. I grew up, my best friend's dad was a coach, Coach John Palermo, coached all over the country in NFL and, wherever else. And I got to see firsthand what, your livelihood is at stake. And so I was a player. I was fortunate to play for Wisconsin and, under him. And I always took that very seriously because I had seen those guys outside of, out of work. And the last thing I want to do is get one of those guys fired. I don't think every player understands that, though, and kind of has, it's a different view to take because you have to understand that, like you said earlier in the podcast, is just, at some point these guys are going to be asked to, take a new job or be let go, and you don't want to be because of you, and maybe not every player can tell that. So I think it's a very powerful thing to make mention of that to the players, that's a very neat way of viewing it.
Yeah.
Staying on the theme of players, a lot of guys, right, typically most position coaches hate, what do you do to build a relationship? Yeah, we bring them over for a meal, that's pretty common. I guess, how do you make your players feel valued outside of their performance on the field?
There's a lot of times where I'll ask them to come in and meet with me. We meet with our players every week academically. So after that academic meeting, a lot of the times, we'll just talk life. It won't even be about football. It'll be about family. It'll be about how they're adjusting on campus, be about what their dreams and their goals are. I think it's really important as a coach to understand what your players are passionate about doing, not really what they want to study. And for us to start a relationship with our players, I got to know what their dreams are. And I want them to dream big. You know, I mean, I don't believe in saying, well, you know, you can't do that. I don't believe in can't, you know, as a coach. If you want to, you know, if you want to be in the NFL, you want to be a millionaire, you want to be a firefighter, you want to live in, you know, Australia and work, I mean, whatever it is, verbalize what that is so I can help you get to that point. And I think they appreciate that, you know, as far as building that relationship. And then, you know, once in a while, I'll send some texts, and whether it's a grade report or something I've seen on online or whatever, and I'll just tell the guys they're doing a great job and that I see them and they're visible. And, you know, when you're managing a roster of 90 plus guys, a lot of guys can feel lost, and especially guys that aren't playing a lot. And, you know, my job here is to develop everybody on this roster. It doesn't matter whether you're first team, second team, fourth team, scholarship, non-scholarship, walk-on. It doesn't matter. You're part of our team. You're part of our brotherhood. And everyone gets treated fairly, but not the same. So, you know, I reach out to those guys, and we do certain things as far as, you know, posting on social media the hardest working guys of the week and the hardest working practice players and or the competition winners, or whether it's our winter conditioning that we're giving praise to guys for outworking other people. And you don't have to be a starter or non-starter to do any of that. So I just think having a pulse of everybody's life and knowing when they need a pick-me-up and knowing when they need to be challenged helps our relationship grow in a lot of different ways.
What is one thing that you've changed in the last 3 years that's helped you be more a more effective coach?
I've kind of gone away from a lot of longer meetings, and I've made them a lot more interactive. So I don't, you know, we're doing install meetings. We'll have a Q&A. I might have guys come up and model it. I might have guys come up and draw it. So it's very interactive. I like to have interactive meetings and getting as many people doing different things at the same time. I don't like to lecture a lot and you know, show the PowerPoint or the diagram and say, okay, this, and this. I want to get them up and show them and get people involved and get people moving. I try to limit those meetings to, you know, 30 to 40 minutes max. If it's a longer meeting, we'll go in 20 minute increments, and then I'll give them you know, that time to spend outside of the room for 4 minutes where they can go check their phones so that they don't feel like they're missing life. And then they come back refreshed. And it's, you know, I ascribe to that theory of that Mike Gundy says about, you know, the hit of dopamine coming to your brain as you start to check your social media or your messages and you feel like, okay, I haven't missed anything, now back to the meeting. And I think there's a lot of merit in that. And I think that's something that I have changed along the way.
Very unique change, and I like it. Yeah, I've heard, you know, we, our school, our health teacher does a good job of just understanding, right? You kind of got your, you know, your age in minutes in terms of time of attention, you know? So if you're working with 18 to 22-year-old kids, you got about, you know, 18 to 22 minutes to kind of capture, you know, what you got to capture. And like you said, give them a break, let them stand up, do something ridiculous, you know, get back down. Otherwise, right, they just start to zone out. So I think that's a very good insight that a lot of coaches can benefit from.
Very true. Very true.
The last question I call victory formation. When the outside world looks at a coach, they will judge them based on wins or losses or accomplishments of their individual players. But the potential legacy a coach can have on his players and his family is much more lasting value than anything can be measured. What legacy or impact are you striving to create through coaching that you couldn't do in any other profession?
You know, it is very true. We are judged by wins and losses. I understand that from the outside part of the world. For me, it's about the next, we call it 4 for 40 here. You know, this 4 years is going to transform you into the next 40. And for me, it's about doing the little things right and having a positive impact on our community and our world. And you know, as Christians, that's what we're tasked to do, is to continue that work. And that's an important piece, you know, that we get to impact lives. You know, the 18 to 22 year old is like the big piece of Play-Doh. You get to kind of form it as you go. And it may not look like something great at 18, but by the time you're 22, it's gonna be fantastic if we continue to follow the right steps. And I think the legacy that I'd like to leave is that to understand that hard work's important, value systems are important, and you know, creating a brotherhood and a group that believes and lives under this umbrella that we work for each other and that we're unselfish and that we, you know, we chase competitive greatness every day. And if I can get ingrained that into our players' lives, I think they'll be successful over the next 40 years. And more importantly, you know, 5 and 10 years out, what kind of, you know, what kind of leader are they in their jobs, in their community? What kind of husband are they? You know, what kind of son are they? And I always tell my players, relationships are more important than stuff. So stuff is not going to be at the bedside when, you know, you're taking your last gasps of breath in this world. Your family will be. So pour into those relationships, and continue to reach out and form those relationships. And it's those relationships that I find, you know, even guys that I coached 15, 20 years ago that, you know, I can still reach out to and have those relationships. And you get those texts that, you know, hey, coach, thanks for saving me. Thanks, especially at a very turbulent time in my life. Thanks for, you know, being a mentor. Thanks for, you know, getting me involved in this job. And those are all the wins that we count, at least I count in my own life. And I know the one person that judges me in this world counts those as well.
Awesome. Well, Coach, we really appreciate your time. This has been a very insightful podcast. You've offered a lot of great insights in a number of different aspects of the coaching world. And we wish you nothing but the best to watch this upcoming season.
Hey, I appreciate you having me on, and good luck to all those coaches and as they enter spring ball here.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.